A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Petum here, as always, and of course we're here to talk all things Aston Villa Football Club with a 1-1 draw at Villa Park against Crystal Palace. Ollie Watkins getting on the score sheet first somehow after Villa, I guess, started the game somewhat well and kind of fell off from there, scoring in the 69th minute with a lovely Luca Dean assist. Of course, Jeffrey Schlupp scored in the 81st minute with a Mark, it's Gahey, is how I'm going to pronounce it at least, assist in the 81st minute, which is a little bit annoying, but nonetheless, if you probably look at the scale of things and the kind of level of play on the day, you'd probably say is about even. If anything, Crystal Palace are probably a little bit hard done by, because let's be honest, Villa didn't show up for large portions of the game. But anyways, it's not just me, because who wants that? We do have Sir Danny Raza back here again. I have begged him to save me from talking all by myself. So anyways, Danny, how's it going for you?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. Chilling. The UK is really starting to enter into its summer phase now, which means that that whole seasonal depression that people tend to get over the winter seems to have gone away. But it's always the way, as the summer comes in, the football tends to move away and we look ahead to international tournaments and whatnot. But here we are, I guess, end of the season. Villa are on the beach. Plenty of other people are on the beach. But yeah, I think certainly a very exciting summer to look ahead to with the news that Felipe Coutinho is now a permanent Aston Villa fan. So can only imagine what the club has planned.
He's a permanent Aston Villa fan.
That's what I meant to say.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, well, you know, talk about that first. Let's talk about that first. We might as well, because of course that happened. Well, obviously, just afterwards, the Liverpool game shortly after at the end of season awards. And of course, lots of awards were given out to the likes of Jacob Ramsey, and Danny Ings got the goal of the season and on and on. And of course, the Aston Villa women's handed out a bunch too. I think Alicia Lehman maybe got the goal of the season, or was it top goal scorer or some award like that. But anyways, was announced there, of course, by Christian Purslow, which is a very interesting way to do it. I mean, I feel like most fans kind of figured it was happening probably over the last month. It probably just felt like there's a better chance than not. I felt like probably in the January, February window, we thought, you know, let's just enjoy it while we can. But as of late, I don't know. I've just had that feeling that he's going to stay. So, Danny, what do you think of the signing and really, I guess, well, permanent signing, I should say, and what it means, I guess, for the summer in particular?
It's interesting you say that, like, yeah, because the way that Gerrard was responding about Coutinho in press conferences, usually if a club didn't know if they were going to get a player, they'd say things like, oh, you know, for the moment, you know, we're focusing on the end of the season, we've still got games left.
Yeah,
you know, we'll sit down with Philip at the end of the season and all that kind of stuff. But no, there's none of that playing it down. You know, Gerrard said, I think, words to the effect of, we want Philippe Coutinho at Aston Villa next season, obviously, right? So the intent was there, so it's clear that the club were working on it. I think what's amazing is that they managed to get it for a fairly cut price with Barcelona, with like some shared player rights or something like that, which means that, you know, I think if there's a sell-on in the future, you know, Barcelona will probably get something for it, but still a cut price. Coutinho is brilliant. I did think that the announcement was really cringe. At the dinner, I thought it was really, really cringe.
The music turned up to like volume 100, basically, and you couldn't hear anything else. I found that a little odd.
Yeah, and it was just the way Purslow announced it. Like, in the last hour, I can confirm Philippe Coutinho has become an Aston Villa player. Like, okay, Christian, it was a big signing.
In the last hour. I like to think of Coutinho eating like an appetizer. Come on, Phil, sign it. Come on. Let's go.
Yeah, I know. But no, it's good. It's good. It's like, look, the thing is, you know, people can argue about how effective he's been. You know, he hasn't been in the best of form in the last few games, you know, but the thing is, he's he's a very you know, creative player. He's someone that even if he's on the bench, opponents will fear him. He's the kind of player you see on the team sheet and think, right, no, he can do something. And maybe he needs a preseason to just maybe kind of get him up to nick again and get him playing consistently. Perhaps that's what we need. But I think a great signing for Villa. And it would be silly to pass on the opportunity. If you've got the opportunity to sign Philippe Coutinho, you sign him.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it was rumored, or I don't know if it's been absolutely confirmed, it was like 17 on mil. I think the kind of hold up thing with Barcelona was they wanted most of it paid up front. And that kind of shows what kind of mess Barcelona are in as of the current time frame in their club's history. Apparently he took a 70% wage cut and he was making something like 400,000 a week or something like that.
Cole, you putting these numbers out your ass.
Yeah, well, no, I knew that. I knew that from like tweets and stuff I saw, but not 400 million a week. I wish, but 400,000 pounds or euros, I should say, per week, which just shows how unsustainable and what a mess that football club there in Spain is, really, when you're paying people that absurd amount of money that, let's be real, I don't know where you get your value back in that. And of course, with the fee that they paid, over 100 million pounds, yeah, they've taken a massive hit. But you know what? It's Villa taking advantage of a team in a poor situation and so showing some strength there. And I feel like, for me at least, how many times have we seen Villa players move on for cut rate prices because we don't hold the power? So all in all, you know what? You look at the sale of Grealish for 100, we bought Felipe Coutinho for even less than a quarter of what we sold Grealish for. Of course, Grealish is probably in installments and probably won't see most of that money back for years and years to come, you'd imagine. But at the end of the day, I think for me, it just signals what's going to happen in the summer. It helps kind of from the name basis in terms of, well, we have Coutinho, we have Luka Dean, who can we really attract? So I expect some big signings at least. And I feel like that's just kind of the intent. But at the same time, I'm thinking, you know what, if we can get deals like this for players that can be very effective throughout a season and it's not at a crazy price, that's even better. So we'll have to wait and see. But Danny, anyways, let's get into the 1-1 draw against Crystal Palace. I mean, same lineup as the loss to Liverpool on Tuesday, which I thought was a very good performance overall. But were you surprised that there wasn't any changes? Because, I mean, it was pretty evident probably from after the 30th minute, I would say, that a lot of these players looked a little leggy. At least they did to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think his thinking would have been, look, they put out a really good performance against Liverpool, so why change it? And yeah, I kind of agree with you. Perhaps it would have been a game to try something a little bit different. I think the width that Palace had over Villa, the way they were able to spray it around, you kind of wondered whether perhaps it was a game to go one up top again. But that's only in hindsight. Yeah, I also think that I understand why he's playing Nakamba, because he needs to evaluate him, to be honest, see if he's the right in that position. So I think the Dougie and McGinn thing's a little bit, it's hard to drop Dougie as well because he's played well. You know, Ramsey's obviously back on the bench, but I don't know who you change really. I think the only one for me is that perhaps Chambers and Buendia, perhaps they deserve a start, but I reckon they'll probably get one against Burnley. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that happen.
Yeah. I mean, well, you think of that, and then you also think of, well, now, I mean, we can kind of briefly mention, of course, Ezri Konsa went off through injury in the 50th minute. I would assume at this point, because they said they'll know more in 24 to 48 hours, but apparently it doesn't look that good. So his season is probably most definitely done, you would say, with two matches to play. And hopefully it's not any longer. But, I mean, Danny, it's an opportunity, at least, even though it's two games, for Callum Chambers to get a little bit of good momentum going into the summer. And I feel like from kind of a defensive standpoint, I feel like Villa could really do with it. You know what? I don't expect a lot against City on the final day, and I know Burnley's not going to be tough because they're literally in the last relegation spot and they're going to go down on the final day. But I'd be going into that Burnley game with him and Mings as the duo, thinking we need a clean sheet here. We need at least one more, but that's how I see it. How about you?
What, in terms of clean sheets, I guess?
Just the momentum with Chambers, really. I mean, for me, it's like, it's important to kind of, I mean, I think we know what we have in Callum Chambers. That's first and foremost. But I don't know. I feel like he's in a good bit of form, and then we just drop him and we just throw Konsa back in because it's Ezri Konsa. Yeah,
this is the thing, isn't it? Like, I don't think Konsa's ever truly earned his place back ahead of Chambers. That's my thing.
No.
He's a top player in that, and I don't think Villa should get rid of him. Like, he is one who might have transfer offers coming in the summer, and he's one that Gerrard might well evaluate and kind of go, 30-40 million maybe. But he's had a real drop in form, and for me, Chambers, every time he's come in, is, you know, proven he's solid. I think at the start of next season, someone asked me this question, you know, like, who's more likely to start next game? I mean, first game of the new season. Is it going to be Konsa or Chambers?
Yeah.
And I mean, at the time, I thought Konsa. And I probably still do. But what does it take? You know, does it take a run of really bad results for Chambers to, like, hold the place?
Now it might even depend on the injury, too. Like, I mean, who knows? It could only be a month and then he's back for preseason, or it could be 6 months. So, like, you never really know, right? So you have to wait and see in that regards. I mean, I guess let me put it this way. What would you rather bet for who starts beside Tyrone Mings? Because I would be assuming Tyrone Mings would be the guaranteed starter on the left center back slot. I guess would it be A, Konsa, B, Chambers, or C, a new center back? That, I guess, that has to be discussed too. So
it's hard, isn't it? Because you literally have to, if you want to bring in someone new, you have to get rid of one of Konsa or Mings, really. Well, you have to get rid of Konsa.
I feel, and like then Chambers is really hard done by too, though. Like, you have to think of it that way too.
This is the thing, isn't it? This is the thing. So I don't think centre back's going to be a priority. But
no.
Having said that, how many like poor goals have Villa shipped this season?
Yeah.
So it's a bad situation.
Yeah. And today was no different, really, if you think about it. The way that they conceded that goal, what was it? A quick little kind of last minute cross before it goes out of bounds. I think it obviously was flicked on by Gahey, and then what, it went off a nut, like a couple, I don't know if it got slightly deflected on its way through, but I mean, there's what, I think Buendia's on the back post, Chambers got caught ball watching a little bit, and I mean, it happens throughout a season, but I mean, like you said, how often does this really happen? And I think that's the issue that you got to look at some point if we're ever really going to take that next step. I mean, something at some point has to be upgraded in some manner. So, I mean, I feel like in the last podcast, I kind of touched on it, but I feel like probably Courtney Haas is gone, in my opinion.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, you'll probably get some value out of him now that you've kind of put him onto an extended contract. So, that's good from a business standpoint. But in my mind, there's going to be a fourth center back coming in, unless one of the youngsters really steps up. But in my opinion, that'll be interesting. And to be honest, I think it'll be an experienced player. So we'll have to wait and see, of course. But
where's Chiellini going?
Yeah, bring in Chiellini. You know what? Dybala's leaving Juve. It's been confirmed. I don't know if it's been actually like confirmed where he's going next. Bring him in. Bring Suarez in. Let's just bring in every big name possible. Why not? Let's
we literally don't know where Chiellini's going, do we?
No, but how old is Chiellini now? Like what, 37, 36 at least? If he's any younger, I'd be shocked. The man looks like he's 50.
Bring him in to deputize for Tyrone Mings, bro. Left hand side, center back.
I love Tyrone Mings, but would that not be the biggest slap in the face to someone who just won the Euros last summer? But,
Which, no, serious question. Like, this is stupid. This is a stupid question.
Yeah.
But serious, what would you take here, Lenny?
Yeah. Do you think he could do it in the Premier League, though?
I'm still wondering, could he keep up with the pace?
Well, yeah, but people said that about Thiago Silva. And he's done very well, so albeit it's at Chelsea. So
could you imagine Chiellini being progressive, like in the Premier League, like when, like, I don't know, say you've got someone like, oh, actually no, Manuel Dennis is like decent, like Jamie Vardy, right? Let's say you've got Jamie Vardy like pushing on him, man, pressing on Chiellini when the ball's at his feet, but like you've got Jamie Vardy doing that to you like every single week. Could he cope with it?
I think so. He's more positionally sound. He's in a slower league, but I don't know why we're talking about this, but anyways.
Well, I'm talking about our next centre back call. How'd you upgrade on Villa's defence? Put it this way, right? Konsa and Mings, no one's disputing how good they are, and there is this loyalty from fans, which is good, which is great about Villa. We have this loyalty with our players.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we look at our John McGinns and we kind of go, look, no. If he has a few bad games, he's done this for us for years. Keep him in there. Like, you know, we can't let go of him. Fair enough, right? Ollie Watkins, he's he gets a few games without a goal, but he's done it for us before, and he shows he wears his heart on his sleeve. Whatever, like he'll do it. Matty Cash, he doesn't get into bad form, but when he does, you know, same thing. People will say, even with Matty Target, people were like, he'll come good, but he's probably the weak. But Matty Target went. It looked hard to think about how you were going to replace him. Who's going to come in to replace him, right? Matty Target, he went. Dean replaced him. We've got another level of left back on him right now. So in the same way, Mings and Konsa, at some point or another, there has to be that step up from him. And you don't know who that is. And but would Tyrone Mings and Ezri Konsa start in a Champions League level club? You know, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, you're correct in the sense, like, if you think about it, we've had Konsa and Mings as the main center back duo for, this will be the second full season, obviously part of the first season back from promotion. So at some point in my mind, they either, I shouldn't say improve, because I think both of them have definitely improved and kind of shown their worth, but I don't know. It's one of those things. And I mean, we'll kind of talk about this probably throughout the summer too. Like, is it certain areas that we need to improve, or is it kind of a wider issue? So, I mean, we'll get to that eventually. But Danny, the one thing I do want to discuss is Felipe Coutinho versus kind of the Emi Buendia debate. I think it's valid at this point in the season because, of course, Coutinho, like we said, signed a new deal, all excited, thought, you know what, he's really good putting the shift. The player ratings I put on the 7500 Holt website, in my opinion, I gave him a 5 out of 10 because I really didn't think he did much today. I mean, I feel a little bit bad saying that because he did have to drop deeper, and that's because players around him weren't really supporting for him to stay further up. And that does affect what kind of impact he can have. But I mean, especially going into Burnley, of course, last time we played Burnley, Buendia played, which I kind of expect probably to happen again. But I mean, with two games left, where do you kind of sit with this? Because for me, I think you run probably Buendia against Burnley and probably, I'm not going to say unfortunately, but it's probably going to go back to Coutinho against City. But do you think there's any argument to just kind of give it to Emi till the end of the season at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it's a little bit political playing Coutinho at the moment, but I guess it's one of those ones where maybe it's the gate receipts thing, man. Maybe it's for fans to stick Coutinho out there. But like Emi Buendia, I don't want this to become a situation where Buendia looks at us over the summer, speaks to his agent and goes, this isn't what I wanted. This isn't what I expected. That's what I'm worried about, because Buendia, you know, he's had good games for us. You know, I'd say the second half of the season has been stronger for him. It's just that he's not been given a consistent run. But I guess, you know, when you look at it, when he first came in, the first few games he played for us, and he wasn't really working as a number 10, but that's where he's primarily had to play under Gerrard, like since we've been playing with this system with one guy behind two forwards.
Mm-hmm.
But he's looked good there. He's looked good. He's looked better under Gerrard in that number 10 position. I think it was quite telling, I suppose, when Gerrard took Ings off and stuck Buendia and Coutinho out wide. I wonder if that's going to be his plan over the next couple of games. But I think what it really needs to do is, like, you know, keep that interchangeable. That front three needs to be interchangeable. There needs to be a way that he can fit two wingers in the side, because, you know, we have a lot of high quality wingers. We have a lot of high quality for players who can play out wide. And yeah, Buendia and Coutinho are just two of them. They can't have them jostling over a spot for the whole of next season, because they're both going to be key players. So that's I think, a big challenge for Gerrard over the summer.
Yeah, I think at some point you almost have to figure out a way to, I'm not saying kind of wedge them both in, week out, but maybe kind of figure out a better rotation. I mean, I think the thing with Coutinho is he started so brightly, and it's kind of, I don't know, it started brightly and then kind of faded, and then he had a few games on the bounce with really strong form, and then he's faded out again. So I almost feel like, in my mind, I mean, it's easier to think about it now, kind of post results, but there almost has to be a way where you can figure out, okay, like, where's his dips going to come? Where can you slide Emi in to kind of counteract that and keep probably like competition and kind of squad levels high? So I don't know. I feel like, I mean, Christ, when's the last time we've had two attacking midfielders of this quality that we can sit back and kind of even make this argument? I mean, I saw a graphic the other day, and it was like, I mean, only a couple seasons ago, and it was like, El Ghazi was being replaced by like Borja Bastan or something like that. I can't remember exactly who it was. I mean, you go back to those days, which were only a couple seasons ago, and you think we've definitely come a long way. So it's going to take some time. I mean, it'd be a massive shame if we lost Emi Buendia in the summer. Then you open up another can of worms because you need to find another attacking midfielder that can really fit that. I mean, could you maybe give it to Jacob Ramsey to say push up? But at the same time,
it won't happen. I'm just saying, I don't want it to be a situation where Buendia becomes unhappy, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, he probably knows what he signed on for. It's a journey. It's not going to be instant too. So I don't know. Like you never really know what these things do. We'll have to wait and see. And like I've been saying for months now, I still feel like there's going to be one or two departures that we might be a little bit surprised by. So
Bailey, maybe, do you reckon he'll be off? Do you reckon there's a Bundesliga team waiting, kind of going?
I feel like now
we can buy him for half the price.
That one's going to be a little political for me because I feel like ownership may say, like, no, he has to stay around. You never know. At what point do they step in and kind of try to protect their investment in a player per se when you forked out that much? I mean, one point as well, when do you cut your losses? I mean, the same can be said about Traore. I mean, I think they only spent, what was it, like 17 odd million on him? Just over a summer ago now.
He's broken, bro.
You're not going to get the money back from. There's a lot of players, unfortunately, within this side that you're probably not going to get your return on investment versus. Some at some point they may look on to ship on thinking you can probably get two players of that quality for the price of one. So we'll have to wait and see. But I mean,
bringing it back to Coutinho, I think, you know, he's more of an, I'd rather he stuck around. He's sticking around, right? You know, I mean, even with Traore, for example, like Traore, Sanson, with them leaving and everything, I'd rather have, Coutinho in the squad than those guys who, you know, obviously have had their injuries and, you know, it's broken them. I think Coutinho is probably he's got his injuries and stuff, but I think it's just going to take a little bit of time to get fit again. I feel like Traore's had that time now. You know, I feel like Sanson's had that time now. It's just not happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you do sit back and look at it and wonder at what point do you kind of stick and twist with some of these players, but to kind of get back to the game at hand, of course, we're recording this on the Sunday when the game, of course, went on earlier in the day. So it's relatively quick reaction. And you guys were hearing this on the Monday or whenever you're listening to it. So hopefully you guys enjoy. But I mean, when you kind of sit back and look at it, Danny, I mean, I picked out Ollie Watkins probably as the main attacking threat that I was rather impressed with. I mean, he probably could have done better with his second goal scoring opportunity, which he lashed across Jack Butland's right. Maybe could have argued that he should have at least got that on target. Probably in the midfield, you'd probably say John McGinn was a standout performer there. And then of course, Luca Dean for me was probably the best defensive player on the pitch. I mean, by far, he was the man of the match that I'll definitely be saying later. So hint, hint to that. But I mean, aside from those three, did you kind of sit back and think, were you impressed by anybody else today? I mean, for me, I just felt like it was maybe like Luca Dean on, say, like an 8.
Dean is brilliant.
Yeah. Watkins and probably, I'd say Watkins probably on a 7. Same with McGinn. And then, I don't know, for me, aside from Matty Cash, I kind of felt like everyone else is probably like a 5 or a 6, to be honest. But how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think, I still think that we lose that game if Nakamba's not playing.
You think so? I thought his distribution. Mm-hmm. I mean, we discussed this kind of earlier, like with a few texts in the group chat. But yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if he's still. Obviously, we know he's not still kind of fully up to speed. But I mean, the ball distribution was scary, and unfortunately, we've seen that early in his Villa career as well.
Yeah, but to be fair to him, I don't think McGinn and Louise, you know, maybe the forwards as well, Coutinho as well. I don't think they did too well in terms of, I mean, true. If you want to talk about shocking ball distribution, look at Coutinho today, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, the guys in front of him really did enough driving the ball forward and getting out of Crystal Palace. There just wasn't enough movement in general today. I think Nakamba did his job pretty well.
True.
I'm not saying he was one of the standout players, by the way, not by any means. No, but no. I think it was just interesting to see him play. I think he had a better game than Luis, for example. McGinn, I think it was really good to see him giving Palace that energy back, because I think in the past you've kind of seen Villa maybe fall apart when a team's, you know, getting rough. I think his battle with Zaha was brilliant, you know, them two putting each other off. Good to not see him get booked, but how he's come away without a yellow is ridiculous. Still, yeah, I don't think there was anybody else really who impressed me. I think even Jacob Ramsey obviously came off the bench. Like he was injured for a little bit. Don't think he really made too much of an impact. Yeah, no, I think other than that, I think Luca Dean and John McGinn really were the ones who stood out for me. But I think Luca Dean more so, just because, like he was. It's always one of him and Cash, isn't it? It's always one of him and Cash that's doing it as the fullback. But he was so, so dangerous. And it was to the point of when he whipped that ball in to Ollie Watkins, I knew it was going in.
Do you think that was an own goal or do you think Watkins actually scored that? Because I still can't tell and I've watched it back like five times.
we'll say Watkins got a touch to it. Why not?
Just the way that Gahey's facing Watkins, it looks like from one angle, if you watch it, looks like it's going off Gahey's heel. But then from the other angle, it looks like it goes off the toe of Watkins. But either way, at least they scored. So
Watkins does the work, right? Like Watkins does the work there. He deserves that. Yeah. He deserves that goal. But I think that cross is what gets that goal.
And that's the difference between him and Matty Target. As much as we love Target's delivery at times when it was him and Grealish kind of linking up on the left, I think. For me, that's the difference. And we saw kind of Luca Dean start off strong when he first came, and then a string of injuries kept him out for a little while. And I think now he's just finally starting to get to form, or top form, I should say, unfortunately. But I mean, that man's left foot. And he almost scored at the end, too. He challenged Jack Butland pretty well, too, with that long range one, too. So, I mean, it's all good in regards to the fullbacks. It's very nice to know that we're not struggling with that, though I'm sure there'll be added competition here in the summer. But, Danny, I mean, I guess in terms of, like, lessons that we might have learned from this game, I mean, do any stand out for you? I mean, I guess one quickly for me would be, I sit back and kind of sit there and think, you know what? How many times can you think of this Villa side where maybe we'll start off strong like we did today relatively and then fade out for the rest of the game and not really even have any glimpses? Like, for instance, scoring against the run of play and then really kind of going at it really hard at the end and almost kind of coming away with it again. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what stood out for me, but what stood out for you?
Yeah, no, it's the inconsistency for sure. How can you go to Liverpool, give them absolutely everything and lose?
Yeah.
And then, you know, have a home game. The home, by the way, form is one big issue, but it's a different one completely. But then, you know, come, you know, have Palace at home and then, you know, just barely touch them, barely lay a glove on them. I mean, we got a point, obviously, but, you know, they need to come out with that same kind of effort every game. And that's the real issue for me, is the inconsistency, because you always see glimpses of a top side. And I'm sure Gerrard will see that as well. It's the hardest thing to fix, isn't it? Because what you need is, right, I've got players who can achieve it, who can do it, but have I got a team that can do this every single week? And that's what, by the way, off topic slightly, but that's what separates like a Jurgen Klopp from like a, from like any other manager on the planet, for example. You know, the sending out players to do that.
Absolutely.
That experience job like every single week. And that's, yeah, that takes a certain kind of player, doesn't it, at the end of the day? But Villa need to sort that out. The inconsistency is for me the biggest thing. I think that system works, but at times as well, it can disappear. You know, the forwards, you know, if a team is so stretched. That's the other thing, actually, that I noticed today. Villa do suffer with sides that can stretch you. Teams that can play out wide, that have, you know, proper, like, wingers touching the sideline. They struggle with that. Palace was spraying that ball about too freely today.
Well, I mean, the amount of long balls too by Villa, just to kind of relieve a little bit of pressure and hopefully send Watkins on a run. I mean, really, aside from, I think, the one chance that Danny Ings kind of lashed over the goal earlier on in the game, and the one he tried to kind of finesse around Butland, I think, just shortly after. Aside from that, I really didn't even really notice him on the pitch for most of it. He was basically pegged back in our own end, kind of trying to get it out. But I mean, it is true. I think the truest thing for me with Villa is we start one way, but it's kind of adapting throughout a game and kind of managing that. So, I mean, whether that's kind of more up to Gerrard to kind of take it on his chin and kind of get a little bit more progressive with that over time, or the players kind of adapting to different situations. I mean, I think back to a couple seasons and we've grown in terms of that. We're not as kind of poor in that regard, but there's still, of course, a ways to go if you want to break into that, I guess, top 10 per se, because I know a lot of us say top 8, but we haven't even really even been inside the top 10. So let's take some baby steps at least. But Danny, let's go over to the 3-word reviews on Twitter. I think there's about 40 odd of them. So we'll get to those. Of course, you can tweet us post-match at 7500 to Holt. And I just kind of liked some that came in quickly after the match, so I'll read them out now. And of course, thank you to everyone that's got involved. Jim says, need new signings. GJHUTV, saving for City. Jonathan Fairless, Nakamba not ready. We'll go to Sanj J. Pradhan saying, watch out Grealish. Let's go to ABCDAVFC. Say that 5 times fast. We did okay. Chez 1321, more Buendia, please. Macavilla, start Buendia. Let's go to Mr. P. Far too sloppy. Nigel WV, very forgettable game. And let's go through a few more right now. Sean Wild, huffed and puffed. Joe Thoma, I hope I didn't pronounce that wrong. Beat Man City. And let's finish with Rupert Bell saying, work in progress. I think that's definitely a good way to end that one there. And of course, thank you, like I said, to everyone getting involved. Tweet us at 7500 to Holt, sorry, in the future to get involved. But Danny, let's throw you under the hot seat here. Let's go to our man of the match / match ball. So, I mean, I feel like it's pretty obvious, but who are you giving yours to?
Yeah, Lucatini. He was the biggest attacking threat, I think, for Villa. He was finding himself free in so many occasions, getting himself near the penalty area. Never felt like he was really putting Villa in any harm defensively either. And yeah, just the precision of his balls today were brilliant, and nearly scored goal of the season for Villa as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said earlier, I mean, I'm making that unanimous. He really didn't put a foot wrong. And I think the one thing for me with Luka Dean that I was concerned about, at least watching a few Everton games over the last season plus, was maybe he's a little, I wouldn't say out of his, like kind of out of bounds or not as good defensively, but that definitely was a concern with how we kind of pressed under Gerrard in the early days with him and Cash, and how that got found out a little bit too quickly. And I mean, over the last few games, he's been very excellent. And I think of errors and kind of where goals are coming from, and very rarely are they coming from areas that he's responsible for. So fair enough to him, and well done to him, and long may that continue. I mean, I still want to see him score an absolute screamer. So hopefully that happens before the end of the season. If it happens against Man City and we beat them because of it, then you know what, fair game. You can't tell that's what I want to happen at all with that statement. But let's touch on Burnley at Villa Park on Thursday quickly here, Danny. I know we've kind of briefly touched on it, and I mean, the relegation battle is like absolutely mental right now. There's still 3 teams in it. Of course, Burnley sitting in 18th, 36 games left. So us to play and Newcastle United, they're on 34 points, minus 18 goal differential. Leeds United have 1 game left against Brentford. They're on 35 points, minus 38 goal differential, which is mental that they've conceded that many, or even in 17th place, in my opinion. And Everton are still in it, of course. They still have, I believe, Palace and Arsenal to play on 36 points, minus 20 goal differential. So, I mean, it's going to be a tight one. This is going to probably be, if Burnley look at it, they might even say, you know what, it will take maybe 2 points, or they probably prefer 4 points really at this point in the season to really secure it. But how are you feeling about this one on Thursday? I mean, we thought they were desperate when we played them, what, just over a week ago or so, whenever it was. But I mean, this is going to be pure desperation, you'd figure, from them, right?
Yeah, like, this is the thing. I think when they played us that first time, it was obviously a case of, right, they've won so many on the bounce, they're undefeated in a while, and yeah, like, let's just keep on going for Mike Jackson. I mean, it would be a walkover. You know, they maybe believed in their own hype a little bit too much. Then they had a few injuries as well, which really made them suffer. And I think now, it's both Tarkowski and me who are out injured. And that's, You know, that's not what they want. They need that leadership in a relegation battle. You know, that being said, they've got two games in hand over Leeds. So if they were to beat us, that puts them in a really good position. So they're gonna try everything, really. Then, yeah, I think that Everton and Leeds situation is just, it's gonna be, I don't know which one of them's gonna which one of them's gonna survive.
I can't even tell, to be honest. Like, yeah. I'll put it out there, and like, I mean, I've worked with some fantastic Leeds podcasts over the last couple season, and they're lovely people, but I really hope they go down. I'm sorry, it's not it for me.
They got a point though, like they got a point against Brighton, and that's a huge point for them.
True,
because it puts the pressure back on Burnley. Burnley weren't able to score at all during the game against Tottenham Hotspur.
True, and that's very true.
Yeah, it's a worry for them, isn't it? Yeah. I did say after the last Burnley game that yeah, look, we'll beat them again. And I still think we will. But there's also that chance that they run on absolute vibes and desperation.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, it's the final home game of the season. So, I mean, I think Villa have only won, what, like something like 6 games at home or something like that. I feel like our very own Simon O'Regan tweeted that out or something. I don't know if that's an exact stat, but it hasn't been very many games this season, if I'm thinking correctly. Maybe it's been more, but anyways, it hasn't been that many. And you sit back in that. Do you think that adds any pressure? I mean, I think any game at home adds pressure, of course. And I don't maybe think it should, maybe during certain games. But, I mean, you bring a desperate team into it, and then you add on kind of wanting to finishing off strong at home, and you probably look at this as the last kind of winnable game, you would probably argue, if you're a realist, for the season. I mean, if we beat them, realistically, and that's our only win left of the season, that puts us on 47 points, and the highest we can really finish is 11th, if that's the case. Because let's be honest, the Man City game on the final day is going to be the biggest uphill battle of the season, where you don't know if players are going to be on the beach per se, because that does happen, and there's mental scores on the final day, I find. But
it's funny, isn't it? Because like Villa can decide relegation, and Villa can decide the title, is where we're at the moment.
Yeah, there's that mentality too. Like, do you want to be relegation and party spoilers? I mean, if there's anything to get up to, I mean, if anything drives a man like Emi Martinez to perform his best, because that man is a shithousery sicko, it's relegating a team and ruining Man City's chances of winning the Premier League.
And that's the thing. I think Villa need to get more mean. And I think that's what's happening under Gerrard. They're getting more mean, bro. Like, the game management's much better. They're holding onto the ball and putting it out and getting better at time wasting and that kind of thing. And also McGinn, for example, giving it large in games. Villa needs to get that aggression back. You know, what Villa need is for teams like Burnley and City to see Villa at the end of the season for important fixtures for them and go, oh, fuck, not Villa. That's what we need.
Exactly.
So I think it would be big for Villa's reputation. I think Gerrard will give a good team talk and tell them, look, just go out there and support the party.
Will it happen? I guess that's the other part of it, but all in all, I mean, I guess if we're going to give a score prediction for Burnley, where do you sit with that? Because for me, quickly, I think, I mean, I want to be fair to Burnley, but for some reason, I see another 3-1 win for Villa. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm going to go 3-0 as well. I think we'll go ahead, put them under pressure, and then, yeah, they'll capitulate.
I think so. I mean, I think first goal scorer probably in that game is going to be massive, because you think if it's Burnley, they're just going to sit back and hold on for dear life. But I mean, if it's Villa, I can see Burnley really crumbling. And I mean, for them, if you look at their situation, I mean, Newcastle have had one hell of a second half of the season turnaround. Of course, they brought in quality and had probably the best January window out of all the sides in terms of what's needed. So maybe they look at that and think, you never know there. I mean, they still have, technically both games for them could be winnable or to get points in, but it's going to be one hell of a task. But you're right. I mean, it's about showing up and kind of performing. So I feel like Buendia will probably start on Thursday, and then you go into Sunday with probably Coutinho and hoping he can spread a little bit of magic. But I mean, the difference from both games is, like, I guess, what do you just roll with the rest of the same team, or do you try a few things out that are a little bit different? Or, like we've kind of touched on, do you go in and say, screw it, we're putting the best side out, we're going to try to win both games, and that's how it is. I guess we'll kind of have to wait and see at this point. But I mean, for Villa, I mean, for most teams, I think it's what, every extra place you finish higher up the table, it's like 2.5 extra million pounds or whatever, which, I mean, you never know.
This is a new player, isn't it?
Well, quite literally. So Villa are what, 13th right now, 36 games, minus one goal differential, 44 points. I mean, they could still finish realistically as high as, if they won both games, that would put them on what, 50 points. So technically they could finish high as ninth, really. If Leicester didn't play well for their two remaining games and teams above them, it didn't work out. Realistically, it's probably about, I don't know, 10th or 11th at this point with how things are going to go, which in that case is an extra five or so million pounds, which exactly, it's, I don't know, it's a few more players. It's a few more youngsters in the academy. It's, you never know, a couple hidden gem future John McGinn's for $2.5 million each. We'll have to wait and see. But anyways, Danny, I think we'll wrap things up there, because we definitely went on for more than long enough. So thank you very much for joining me. Of course, you can find Danny on Twitter at RazzaJourno. You can find me on Twitter at TalkAstonVilla. Tweet the team at 7500 to Holt. You can email the podcast, HoltCast@gmail.com. And of course, leave a positive review rating wherever you're listening to this podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, wherever you're listening. It's appreciated, and we definitely do notice. But anyways, we should be back hopefully briefly after the Burnley game on early Friday morning, hopefully. And then we'll go into the fun festivities on the weekend. So anyways, there'll be lots of stuff coming up here in the summer, so keep an eye out for that. But I'll shut up, and don't forget, up the Villa.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.